The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Connect with ultra-fast speeds and our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
9:20, nearly 9:26 now, this Wednesday morning. About 3 years ago, we got a letter into the programme that knocked us off. It just hit us for six because it captured the sort of, in many ways, the community spirit that we're talking about today, about lighting the lights in Loughrea and Uachtaráin and around the place and people coming out with their sparklers in the front garden. Just that lovely sense of people, Irish people, at their very, very best. And I wanted to catch up with Mary Noonan and see how she is. She joins us now. Good morning to you, Mary. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
Well, I'm going to ask you to bring us back a few steps, if you don't mind. You're from what part of the world?
I'm from County Clare, and as I'm speaking to you here, I'm looking out an absolutely beautiful vista on Loughrea in East Clare, you know, a fabulous part of County Clare. A hidden gem, I would say, in the geography of the countryside. A lovely place.
And oh, gosh, you must have beautiful colours and nature at this time of year there.
Oh, my God, it's wonderful. Yeah, the trees and the autumn colours are stunning, to be honest. Yeah, really fabulous.
And the people you would have taught down through the years as a principal of what school?
I was the principal of Drumandoura National School in Killinina here in the... I'm about 5 miles, 5 or 6 miles from where I live.
Yeah.
And I was the principal there for... Well, I taught there for 30 years. I was the principal for 29, so that's a long time.
Yeah, congratulations on your retirement.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
long deserved, and I hope you're enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I am actually now. I much more even than I thought I would initially, but it was an unusual year to retire, of course, with all that happened.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, you'd miss the kids and my great staff, and I want to say a shout out to my colleague who's also going to retire in the coming year, Mrs. Colleran, a wonderful colleague that's worked with me, and all the staff and the parents and children, wonderful people.
Yeah, good on you, and we wish her well too. I'm going to talk about your children, Declan and Michael and Cathal and Emer.
Yes.
And if we go back to Emer's joie de vivre, and I say that emphatically using the French expression, because you were Francophiles, the pair of you.
We are and were, yeah, absolutely. From an early age, I suppose, both of us were, well, I was very interested in French. And when the children were young, we went to France, and Emer and I in particular went, you know, even on our own and with friends. And she was smitten by France. From a very early age, she loved French and she loved the way of life and she loved the idea that they took 3 hours to have their lunch. Well, that would suit her now. And, you know, yeah, and when she did her leaving cert and was due to go to study music at the College of Music in Cork in UCC, just literally not a very short time beforehand, she decided... she thought, I think, that by studying music full-time, even though she had done every grade possible in the two instruments that she played, that she might lose her love of music. And, yeah, so she decided to study French and Irish in UCC.
She was very talented. I mean, obviously, she was... What instruments? Was it violin?
Yeah, the piano initially and then the violin. But she started the violin with a good friend of ours, Sister Mary Brosnan in Gort, and until she was maybe, well, right up along, and she joined an orchestra called Cool Music Orchestra that are based in South Galway but have people coming from all over. There's an incredibly talented lady there, Katharina Baker. She's a German lady who started up a school of classical music in a small town in the west of Ireland, in Gort. And it's just gone from strength to strength. There's probably 200 people in it now. It's amazing.
Amazing. So with that lovely combination of French and music... And as an interest in a lust for life, I suppose, brings us to Emer turning 21 in April 2017 and graduating from UCC in October and then France.
Yes, yeah. She had it in her mind all the time, really, to go to France. Now, she didn't take the gap year, the year that many of them do, the Erasmus year. So I think she decided when she'd be earning a few bob, you know, to come off mum's payroll for a while. So she applied for this position under the program. It's a bilateral program between the Department of Education here and the French Department of Education called Enseignant étranger, and she was accepted for that, and she was placed in the school in a town called Annonay, which is down about 30 miles south of Lyon in the Rhône Alps. Beautiful area, actually. And she thought she actually got word that she had, that she had been chosen to go on her 21st birthday on the 28th of April, 2017.
So she was on the move. Now, I mentioned your children, and there is one daughter, Emer.
Yeah.
So,
three boys, actually. Declan and Michael are her older brothers, two very tall men, and then Cathal, who is just barely a year younger than her.
So I presume Dad would have had kind of trouble saying goodbye at the airport there on this occasion.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, God, my God, he absolutely adored her, yeah. And the boys, she was very, she was just great fun. She was the best crack ever. She was a great one to go out for, if you were going out for the night, even though I was her, well, when she was a bit older, I guess, her mother or her dad. And she was great fun. She loved the crack. She just did an almighty lot of giggling for the first 21 years of her life and laughing. And and I had her actually in school. I taught her in school for four of the years. And
oh, God, help you both.
Well, I think she far surpassed me in music early on, so I used to channel her energies into
vicarious living.
Into musical exploits and stuff in the school,
Oh, I see. Okay, very good.
Yeah,
And from France, was it daily contact or weekly or how?
Oh, God, daily.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that would be nothing new because she wasn't a great fan for going to bed early, but then I'm kind of accused of that a bit myself, so she could be sending you texts of 10, 11, and maybe even 12 o'clock at night, She'd have a lot of funny things going on. We had a sort of a coded conversation that would go on. Mostly text now. I mean, at the weekend we would speak, and yeah, she was just, I used to really enjoy her. You'd have laughed out loud, really, at some of the deafness she'd be at, She'd be telling you about the little children in France and, telling you. And she literally knew nobody there going out in that town, not one person, but she wasn't long there when she found her tribe. And, met up with French people playing Irish music in the most zany way, really. She just went to stay in an Airbnb, and it turned out that they were one of the few people in that town who held a session once a month playing Irish music. It was just mad.
So it was around, that was September 2017, September, October, November, kind of around this very time then, three years ago.
Exactly the time, yeah.
And you would have become aware that something was wrong around the 8th or 9th of November. Would that be right?
Yeah. On the evening of the 8th, which was a Wednesday, she would have had a half day. In France, they have half day on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And that would be the day that she would, try and get to the internet cafe, because I believe the internet was poor in her, where she was staying. And she was always having trouble with the phone, which, the saga of the phone went on and on. It's funny about that. And I had given her a new phone when she went back. She came home for her graduation on the 24th of October, and this was 2 weeks later exactly. And, she sent me a lovely photograph that evening, and, kind of was just saying, where are you, and what's this, and there was no reply. And then I didn't get too panicked about it because, I just kind of thought, so the following, I did send her a good few messages and there was nothing coming back, and I said, she's dropped the phone or something's happened. So then on the following evening, I hadn't yet told my husband the thing, or I didn't kind of want to, flan my husband drives a school bus, and I didn't kind of want him, anxious or worried about anything. So, I was kind of quietly trying to find out what could be, and I didn't really have any contact with anybody in France at that point. And so, into the night I was still sending messages, and I eventually managed to make contact with, I didn't realize I had, but I had managed to track down the Airbnb people who had the music, Philippe and Nelly, Lelou, in Annonay, and told him, would he just go to the apartment and could he check, was her violin gone? Because she literally wouldn't go into the town. She'd bring the violin with her. You'd never know what had happened, Something could happen. There could be a music session somewhere.
Okay.
And her runners. And so he obviously went down to and her runners were gone. Her violin was there. And he then went to the police and they went to the school. And yet I didn't know any of this. We were still unaware of it. Saturday morning, that was by Friday evening, we were aware that there was something wrong and that she was missing. This was now the 10th, and we were on our, and we had to report her missing here, of course, in Ireland. And we went, and we were on, literally getting on the plane in Dublin when they announced that, you know, that somebody had been found. Yeah.
And that somebody was Emer.
Yeah.
This story is it's really so horrible that I don't want to. I was enjoying our conversation up until now. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Because I
yeah.
felt that Emer was kind of with us in spirit, and I don't
know. I think she is.
Do
right.
you? Do you really?
Oh, I do. Oh God, yeah. She'd be saying, "Ma'am, do you really have to go into the morbid details?" Like.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, she became a great Corkonian once she went to UCC, and she adored Cork. And she down to the taxi drivers, and she loved mimicking, of course, so she was forever taking off someone. And she had the best fun and the best friends in the orchestra and the students in UCC, yeah. But particularly the UCC orchestra. That family, they just became her closest friends. And she had three or four years of a... She absolutely had a ball down there.
Good. Yeah. She loved it.
She loved it.
If we go back to France for a moment, just to establish what happened to Emer, in so far as you want to tell us, Mary, or as far as you're comfortable telling us.
Okay.
Why don't you have a go and try that, and don't go where you don't want to be.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, she loved to run. She was always, you know, to go jogging or running, that was her kind of a release, apart from playing music. And she was, on Sunday, she had, you know, been telling me about this beautiful hidden trails that she had found in the woods. And, of course, straight away I was going, God, stop, don't be running on your own in the woods. But, of course, it wasn't really anything like I had imagined. It was beautiful, just pathway through the trees, and the colours were stunning. And, you know, you had all the maple leaves, tons of them, absolutely dry leaves on the ground. And what they've established was that when she was running that she possibly tripped on the root of a hidden root, you know, with all the, you know, 18 yeah. inches of leaves, mm. and it kind of catapulted her forward, and she went down a ravine into what at that point was a stream, but, you know, when we were there in May or June the following year when the snows had melted, it was a river, actually, but it was just, you know, it was low water. And there was one rock there, and she hit her head off the rock, and that was the end of, yeah. So it was really... Saturday, so from Wednesday to Saturday before we were able to establish, well, to Saturday really, before we were told, like, and even at that point, I mean, everybody, including the authorities over there, were thinking the worst, that because she had kind of, she'd gone down under the bank, just under the bank, which was only about, you know, 12 or 13 feet deep, mm. but I presume just because she hit the rock, you know. But initially they thought the worst, and there was a great relief, I think, both in Ireland and in our family and among our friends that it was accidental and that there was no foul play, you know.
Yeah, it was just a horrible, horrible accident.
It was just the freakiest thing, because, I mean, she would have run in much more, you know, even here where we live, it's beautiful with the hills and everything, and mm-hmm. she often came back in the dusk, and I would say, oh, God, Emer, could you try and come home before it's dark, like... Mm. But it wouldn't even worry her going off running in that kind of... She was that kind of girl, and she just didn't see danger, and she didn't... She never worried about things in life, and wasn't it a lovely way to live, really?
Well, you've celebrated her life in such a joyful, positive way that you feel that she had, up until this, obviously, this horrible, fatal moment, she had a gorgeous life, thank God.
She had,
you know, that she didn't kind of... Anyway, look, the point I'm trying to make is that you now have this situation on your hands, Mary. You've been a principal for nearly 30 years. You've worked with kids all your life, and you've dealt with, I'm sure, all sorts of tragedies, but from a distance. And now here it's visited upon your own doorstep. How did you all cope with the news as a family?
Oh, my God, it was just devastation. I mean, I don't think, and we lost a beautiful young child, Kira, in our own school, and because it's a small school, and that was a huge tragedy to mm. all of us in the area, as well as her dear family and mm. ourselves. And then, but when Emer died, I don't think I had any real, complete sense of loss. I think my understanding of loss has completely changed. Real loss. I mean, there's loss when you lose your parents. It's the loss of a child is something.
It's the greatest aberration of nature.
It is really
For a child to go before a parent, and there's nothing right about it.
No.
At all, and you know, no kind words. There's no salve.
No, were, I mean, people, absolutely, I mean, the whole country was so amazing. They were so incredibly supportive of us and still are. But I think we had to try to get to navigate a way through it ourselves because, I mean, certain things that people say, like, you know, you'll get over, the word over is completely wrong. It should never be used in a situation. It should, if you can try to get through it. I mean, the boys were incredibly strong, and Flynn, my husband, and they, particularly Cahal, her youngest brother, they were extremely close when they were very small kids. And the two older boys adored her, of course, because she was the only girl, and Declan and Michael, they, you know, they teased the hell out of her, mind you.
That's part and parcel of the sibling world.
And she would, her way of dealing with it was so funny. By the time she was 12 or 13, she was well able to play Bohemian Rhapsody. So she would go to the piano.
Wow.
And beat it out.
And beat them that way.
She beat them that way, absolutely.
That. That's amazing. That's amazing. When you wrote to us 3 years ago, do you remember putting pen to paper that time? Or
yeah, I do actually, because I was finding it. I think I was stunned in so many different ways. I mean, I was stunned obviously from the accident, from the loss of this beautiful human being in our lives, but I was incredibly stunned by the community and by the whole extended community here. Who actually lifted us up, and we just kind of, it was like being on a, you know, I won't say a cloud, that's the wrong word, a kind of a wave that just, they carried us along through the depths of terrible despair, really, and huge numbers of people helped us, and I will never forget that, and it just brought to mind to me, you know, that community is massively important, and I suppose, you know, what we might talk about in a few minutes is a different community, but that, you know, that community is probably key, really, because, you know, yeah, key. I think that community, without community, we don't really have anything.
We have nothing,
And when the music died, as it did for us, like in our lives at that time, I think if it hadn't been, I think the light started to shine really through a different community, as well as through the community that I spoke about at the time, you know, and I think we can't underestimate how valuable it is to us, even at this time, going through this very strange 2020 year, you know.
Yeah, because you couldn't speak the last time because it was too soon.
Too hard.
Yeah,
it was
too hard.
I couldn't speak for about 18 months, about, literally, nearly 20 months.
Well, what did you do with all that emotion, that 18 months of pent-up emotion? Where did it go?
Well, I wrote stuff, and I also walked an awful lot. I walked and walked the burn, and I walked up here over the beautiful walks all around Loch Rainy and Phlegmount and Carr here. And I kind of immersed myself in nature, and I just watched all the changing and then going, you know, as we are now going into the dying of the season. And then you see the resurrection again in spring of the beautiful countryside. I think nature was an incredible salve for me. I read a lot of books. And we talked a lot, really, ourselves, Flynn and myself and the lads, you know. And we tried to keep talking, even though it was hard, like. And then I had amazing, wonderful, we called them the angels here beside us, Tina and Kathleen and Mary and Margaret, you know, and Nora and Roger. Those people kept us, and all my family, of course, I couldn't forget them. They were just unbelievable.
I mentioned a young man who passed away this summer, yesterday morning on the programme, and I see his friends, and at 21, there you can see how the sadness, and it's quite a lot to process at such a young age.
I Ivan with her friends like that. You know, and even through their devastation, they keep in contact with us all the time, and they text us, and I text them, and I really sort of feel like she's alive with them and still on the journey with them.
And is that important for you? Because I think a lot of parents of younger people who've passed away too soon will want to know what is the best way to stay sane and to stay afloat?
Well, I suppose, you know, well, I would say one of the things that was a great help to us was a constant, you know, keeping in contact and embracing her friends, because you also know that they are massively hurting. And, you know, I suppose you kind of have to reach out, even though you're so locked into your own sadness, really. And I think you have to try desperately to remember all of the things that they would want you to be doing. And they wouldn't want us to be desperately sad, and they wouldn't want us to be down or, you know, morose. And I know she would say, you know, ma'am, come on.
I get the impression, Mary, that you speak to Emer a lot, and that involves a lot of Emer saying to you, get your act together, get down to the shops, stop moaning and just keep going.
Absolutely. I talk to her all the time.
I can hear her talking to you almost. You wrote to us, you said, when we returned to Ireland a week later after the horrible events that we talked about, that you said that we were completely stunned by the unbelievable community spirit that saw us cope through the early days of this tragedy. Like so many others who've suffered the loss of a child, our lives have changed irrevocably. And you talked about the flight attendant who held our hands and hearts after hearing the news, the inhabitants of the tiny town of Annonay, the incredible attaché to the Irish Embassy in Paris, Mick Moran, who stayed with and supported us in France through those initial days of shock and crippling grief. And you've mentioned your friends and neighbours around the place. All these kindnesses, these micro kindnesses that lead to a macro greatness and goodness, brings us to the Emer Noonan Music Bursary Award established 2 years ago to help young people in the west of Ireland to get access to music. This is a beautiful legacy, Mary, if I may say so.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. And I mean, it is actually, because now we can see the music carrying on. So the music hasn't died. That's the whole thing. The music hasn't died. And Katharina Baker, who is the leader of and the director of Cool Music, and her very able assistant, Fiona Buckley, came to us in the spring, around the time of her birthday in 2018. And, you know, we were planting a tree in her honour and remembrance of her. And so we've done a lot of planting gardens, actually. There's gardens for Emer everywhere around the place here. And Katharina had written this magnificent piece of orchestral music called Carpe Diem, and they wanted to perform it in her memory. So a concert was organised for her actual anniversary in November 2018. And it was probably one of the most magical nights I was ever at anything. And it was full of, I mean, there was a whole seesaw of emotions at it, but it was wonderfully cathartic for us, even if it involved tears and everything. You know, it was very uplifting, and all her friends came, and as I say, the Cool Music orchestras and her friends who played, the youngsters who played music, and it was the most magical night. She was right there, having a right good time in the middle of it. So they did it again in 2019, mm-hmm. and this year we remembered another beautiful young man from the same area, down near Gort, Eli Murray, who also died tragically and was a musician and singer, great young fella. And so from those two concerts, the proceeds have gone mostly towards the bursary, which we formed, and we've got an incredible amount of private donations as well, very great generosity. So this year, of course, there's no concert.
Yeah.
So once again, you know, it was actually my son this time, Michael, who lives in London, came up with the idea of doing an online musical challenge.
Great.
And he said, don't you remember Emer and all the screaming with the ice bucket challenge? And I was going, what are you thinking about doing now? And he said, well, Mary, this will be like the ice bucket challenge, but there won't be any freezing water or screaming. So, and really, the idea was born, and we have a fantastic, we call it the Carpe Diem event, of course, from Seize the Day, because yes. That's the kind of character. They really felt that was the kind of character she was, and she just went for it. And so the Carpe Diem event this year is online. And we have the most phenomenal response from singers and musicians all over the country. These are all the well-known household names. In fact, our own neighbour and great friend of the family, Martin Hayes, is going to, that he's going to start off the proceedings next Sunday. And then it goes on for 2 weeks, so I think we should have a national holiday, really.
It sounds like it's going to be a rolling festival.
Early winter festival.
Why not?
Forget sound and all that carry on. Yeah. Let's have a music festival, you know.
It sounds gore. And how do people get involved then?
What they do basically is that they, you know, film a short performance, something hopefully happy and joyful, and they upload it to their own social media page, and then there's a media page that we've created called Carpe Diem Sing and Play. So the event itself is called Seize the Day, Sing and Play, Remembering Emer. So they can just, they upload it, and I'm... There's people waving things at me here telling me to say, don't forget to say
it. Don't forget to say it.
Don't forget to put in the hashtag Carpe Diem Sing and Play.
Carpe Diem Sing and Play.
I have no real idea why you have to put in a hashtag, but I'm sure there's a good reason why.
Mary, people like us don't have to ask the reason why. We just have to do these things and presume that we're being well advised. How about that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It's been good to talk to you. It's been very good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I really want to say a big thank you to the Carpe Diem committee.
Of course.
And I'm talking about Fiona and Ellie and Paula and my own son Michael in London.
Yeah.
And Emma, Declan's girlfriend, and Tommy, who's a fantastic puppeteer, your man's puppets.
Don't forget Tommy now with the puppets. I mean, the whole thing would fall apart if he wasn't there pulling the string. But listen, to you and Declan and Michael, Cottle, and obviously Flan, we're sending you all our love. I really mean that. And it's so nice to put a voice to the letter. And I hope
much.
We can be friends.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And we got a huge feedback, actually, from the letter. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, look, it's so lovely. And I'll raise my cup to Emer here this morning, if that's okay with you.
So I hope lots of people, and everyone and anyone can join the Carpe Diem event. And I think actually Eilish is going to put it on your...
We sure are. Our Facebook page and all our details. We'll put everything up there so that people can come straight to us and get what they need.
Brilliant.
Mary, have a lovely morning. That wasn't easy for you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Really good to talk to you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's 8 minutes to 10 this Wednesday even morning. A lot of response to Mary there, listening to Mary talk about losing Emer. I'm floored by her strength. Such an affecting description of her relationship with her daughter. An amazing, articulate lady has put into words exactly how we feel after losing a loved one in our immediate family. I lost our 18-year-old beautiful Louise Duke Keegan in 2017. God help us. That's from Suzanne in Dublin. It's a very hard life to lead, and I feel everything that Mary is saying. And do you know what I like what you did there, Suzanne? Is you told us Louise's name. I think it's important. You can say lose a loved one and keep it anonymous, but I think sometimes it's lovely to bring the person's name out and alive and into the room for that moment. So we'll think about Louise this morning, and thank you for that. And Sinead in Galway says, Mary sounds like the most beautiful person. Emer was obviously just like her, and sadly their time was cut so tragically short. But Emer lives on in Mary's spirit, an amazing person, and I wish her goodness and peace. And that's some lovely messages coming in for Mary Noonan this morning. Thank you for all of that. And we'll take a quick break.